Hello again and welcome back. A look at the day's headlines would document that this world is an extraordinarily violent place, from beheadings in the Middle East desert to gunfire in urban America, to too many places in between as well. It's got to be a frustrating time for those who have committed themselves to promoting nonviolence, and that's the mission of our next guest, Dr. Arun Gandhi. He's the grandson of Mahatma Gandhi, the man who helped lead the Indian independence movement using tactics of nonviolence and civil disobedience. Arun Gandhi will be in town for an event sponsored by the Center for Survivors of Torture and War Trauma. He serves refugees and immigrants who have come to St. Louis from countries experiencing ongoing unrest and violence, such as Afghanistan, Iraq, Somalia, and unfortunately so many others. Dr. Gandhi is in Rochester, New York. He joins us by phone. Dr. Gandhi, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me on your show. I'm looking forward to this.
I am too. I have to say, however, that nonviolence in today's world seems something of an oxymoron.
It does, but it is the only thing that is going to save this world, if it's going to be saved at all. You know, we have created all over the world a whole culture of violence that dominates so much of our life. Every aspect of our life is dominated by the culture of violence, from our language to our entertainment to sports, to relationships, to everything. It's a very exploitative, selfish, self-centered society all over the world. And what we are seeing today is the result of that kind of attitude and behavior that we have over the world.
But how do you start and where do you start to change this culture?
We have to change with ourselves. And that is what Gandhi meant when he said, we must become the change we wish to see in the world. If we cannot create peace in ourselves and create harmony in ourselves, we are not going to be able to create it outside. So it has to begin with the self, and through the self we can transform the world. The world is not going to change by law, and it's not going to change because we wish it. It has to be built, and it has to be nurtured by all of us.
Those are wonderful words, and I'm sure no one would disagree with what you're saying. However, how are you going to convince these ISIS fellas to stop beheading people in the middle of the desert?
Well, I think what we need to do is not look at a crisis situation when it occurs. We need to be more proactive and look at the problem before it becomes a crisis. And if we can do that, then we will be able to bring about a better world there. But if we just look at crisis, and when something like ISIS happens, or Iraq happens, or Afghanistan happens, and then we try to find a remedy for that, it's going to be impossible to find a remedy.
But
we should stop being crisis managers and become more conflict managers.
That sounds pretty good to me for the next crisis, whatever it may be. But it's too late now for some of the things that are going on in this world.
Yeah, it's never too late. I mean, we can still look at things instead of going and fighting and bombing people and aggravating the situation. If we stop to talk to them, to find out, to reach out and see why these people are so angry with us, or why they want to create this kind of situation, then we would be able to find a remedy for it. But as long as we react to the violence with more violence, we are only multiplying violence.
Yeah, there again, it just seems like it's a problem that is extraordinarily difficult to solve. You talk about having people sit down and try to resolve what issues they have. Nobody seems inclined to do
that. We haven't really made an attempt to even do that, so how do we know whether it's difficult or not?
Yeah.
I mean, every time a crisis happens, we just want to send our military or go and bomb them and destroy them. I think it's all this whole mindset of good people and bad people. When we divide people between good and bad, We feel that if we get rid of the bad people, we will be left with a world full of good people. And that's not true, because every one of us is capable of doing good and bad. And it depends on what buttons are pressed.
Let's take this issue to a part of the world that's a little bit closer to you. I'm thinking of the dispute that has gone on now for well over half a century between India and Pakistan. There's been a lot of talk and a lot of fear that two powers such as these nations could really disrupt the world to a huge degree. Why can't these two sides get together?
Well, that's the tragedy. You see, politicians, for their own power and for their the control that they want everywhere, it's not just India and Pakistan, but everywhere else. Politicians are the ones who make the worst decisions and have created this kind of worst atmosphere in the world. I feel that if we have a world without politicians, we'll be very happy.
You know, I think
and
you just made
able to create peace very easily.
You just made a lot of people very happy and nod in affirmation with that particular comment. Yeah, sometimes the politicians are not the answer to the question.
Yeah, they are only looking for power and getting into positions of power and then exploiting that power. And that's not what the world needs today. It needs more understanding, respect, and compassion. And politicians don't seem to be capable of doing that.
While I mentioned India and Pakistan, let me get your take on the Nobel Peace Prize awarded the other day to Malala Yousafzai of Pakistan. Some people think that that might be the beginning of a rapprochement between the two countries.
I hope it does, and I think it's a good beginning. And I hope that the people on both sides realize, you know, it's a very good thing that a Muslim from Pakistan and a Hindu from India have received this award. But again, as I said, the politicians who are looking only for their own power and for their own control over the country, they're going to exploit every situation for their own sake. And I don't think as long as we have this culture of violence and as long as the majority of the people remain silent and don't do anything about it, we're going to have this problem all the time. It's only when the people start leading that the leaders will follow us.
How would that apply, do you think, on a less dramatic level, in a sense a less dramatic level? And I'm talking now about some of the things that are going on in the streets of this country. A lot of violence, a lot of guns. I'm sure, aware of what's been going on in our own community here in Ferguson. We've been talking on the macro level, international level. What about street by street in a country like the United States?
Well, it's happening here also because it's the same culture of violence. You know, we have a big gun industry. We produce weapons of mass destruction. They need to be sold. And so we have gun shows and guns are being sold as freely as candy. And when people get this and they get angry, they use it and cause violence. So it's that whole culture of violence where everything is materialistic and people want to make money by any means possible, then you have this kind of tragedy and we have to face it.
Yet again, it seems a difficult problem to solve. The words are good and are meaningful, but it doesn't seem to happen. We're dealing with the problem here that they've been dealing with all over the country for a great many years, perhaps even a couple of centuries.
Yeah, I think it's largely because we have approached it the wrong way. You know, we have looked at it only as racism, and racism is a byproduct of prejudice. Prejudice exists in every one of us, whether we are black, white, brown, yellow, whatever our color, wherever we come from, we have prejudice. And it is those prejudices that spawn these kinds of byproducts like racism and gender disparities and homophobia and all of these things are byproducts of those prejudices. So if we don't individually face up to our own prejudices and change ourselves, no law is going to make it possible for us to do it. I mean, a law can enable integration, but it cannot force a person to change his or her attitude. So what we are looking at is not a legal solution. We don't need alone. We need a solution where people become aware of the need for change within themselves and to get rid of the negative attitudes and negative feelings that we harbor.
You know, we are going through a period of some demonstrations, street demonstrations, and civil disobedience in this community because of a shooting in Ferguson a couple of months ago. I wonder, number one, what you think your grandfather might think of this tactic here and whether this is still a valid tactic today.
Well, it is certainly a valid tactic, and I think the demonstrations are very helpful and useful, but they should not be governed by anger. You know, anger should not have any place in a nonviolent struggle. We should be, the struggle should be aimed at trying to change the other person, trying to bring about compassion and love in the other person. When Dr. King said that we cannot fight violence with violence, he also meant that we cannot fight hate with hate. Then we are only multiplying hate. So there should be no anger there, but we should be willing to passively, quietly absorb the punishment that they mete out to us. But we will not retaliate. You know, Gandhi said, I am willing to die, but there is no cause for which I am willing to kill.
When Malala won the Nobel Peace Prize the other day, I was surprised, and perhaps I shouldn't have been, that your grandfather never won the Nobel Peace Prize. I think a lot of people might assume that he would have.
Yeah, a lot of people did feel that way, and well, you know, I don't know why he wasn't given. I suppose it has to do with India being a colonial country at the time, and the British had a lot more authority, and I think there is rumor that the British government stopped Norway from giving the award to grandfather.
I had not heard that. Most interesting. I should point out to our audience that you're going to be here on Saturday, October 18th, for the annual Hope and Healing Gala for the Center for Survivors of Torture and War Trauma. Again, Saturday, October 18th at 8 p.m. at the Moto Museum on Olive. What is your message going to be in that context, Dr. Gandhi?
I'm going to speak about how tragic it is that in the 21st century, when all of us claim to be more and more civilized, that this kind of violence and torture and hate and all that still persists, and that people have to be uprooted from their countries to seek refuge in another country. This is shameful for all of humanity, and we should wake up to that and do something, because we need to create a world of love and compassion and respect. And that is the only thing that is going to save this world and save future generations.
You know, I think we only have a few seconds left, but I still find it hard, and I'll go back to the beginning of our conversation, to be really optimistic about the world changing very much in the foreseeable future.
Well, you know, we can't give in to pessimism. We have to be optimists, because it's changing the world is in the hands of each one of us. And if we become hopeless and pessimists, then the world is never going to change. So whatever we can do, you know, like grandfather said, that we must be like farmers who go out into the farms and plant seeds and hope and pray that they get a good crop. So in the same way, peacemakers are farmers who go out and plant seeds and hope that some of those seeds will germinate and people will become more peaceful.
Let's hope.
So we can't afford the luxury of being pessimists. We have to be optimistic.
Let's hope that that is contagious. Thank you very much, Dr. Arun Gandhi. He will be in St. Louis October 18th at the Moto Museum on Olive for the annual Hope and Healing Gala for the Center for Survivors of Torture and War Trauma. Thank you, sir, for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Tomorrow in St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with the Democratic and Republican candidates for the Illinois 12th District Congressional seat, incumbent Bill Enyart and challenger State Representative Mike Bost. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stopublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.